Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham, and joined by Rod Mullins today. And Rod and I are going to talk some NASCAR. Let's talk about big race in Kansas this past weekend. Very thrilling finish as Kevin Harvick gets his fifth win of the season. And, boy, a race and a finish. He and Martin Truex trading the lead on the last lap. And, you know, there's a couple big wrecks that helped set the tone for the last maybe 10 or 12 laps. And, Rod, take us through. Kevin Harvick getting his fifth win. What a season so far for Harvick and his team.
Oh, yeah, for Kevin Harvick, it's definitely been a season, and it's also been a great season. And I think I mentioned this last week, Stewart Haas Racing has really kicked in here in this first part of the season. You know, we're already almost a third of the way through the 2018 NASCAR Monster Cup Series season, and already Kevin Harvick has, you know, he's picked up that big win. He charged back from sixth place. He chased down Martin Truex Jr. Really after that restart on lap 259. He started finding some speed, and a lot of the other cars had they voted not to go with, you know, fresher tires, and they had made that kind of choice, and especially getting down late in the race. You know, Truex thought, I think I can hold this off. I think we can do this, and we might be able to pull off a win because he has won there. He won both races there back last year. And so he had to get the edge to him a little bit on that because he just loves the course. But Truex just started losing ground very quickly to Harvick, who came just out of nowhere. He beat him to the finish line, though, in those final laps. He beat him to the finish line by just under 0.390 seconds. And it was a race to the finish, just exactly like what you said. I mean, it was there for a while. It was a wide gap. And then Harvick started using the high side of the racetrack. He started using that, closing the distance, and then Truex came in. Truex knew he was in trouble. He started trying to find a way, and then before it was over with, Harvick just raced his way on through to the finish line and into victory lane for the fifth time this season. And if you're Tony Stewart and Carl Haas right now, especially Tony Stewart, you've got to be smiling from ear to ear because this was a team that a lot of people thought was going to be on its last legs here in the next couple of years because they had really not produced anything here over the last couple of years. But you've got to give credit to Kurt Busch. You have to give credit to Clint Bowyer. You also have to give credit to Kevin Harvick coming into this. And you also have to point some fingers, too, and say they're going to get a win here sooner or later, another one in the ranks with Eric Almirola. Almirola had a great performance, too, in this race. He was doing really well there and was running around the track there in the top 20 for most of the race. But, you know, had some bad wrecks. One, especially when William Byron, the rookie this year, he got loose underneath Clint Bowyer's car. He knocked Bowyer up the track, and then the next thing that happened, the number 24 car, it slammed into the outside wall. Just all of a sudden erupted into flames as it was coming down through to the settle in the infield. He came out of it all right, but Byron said, you know, it hurt really bad, you know, for the impact and everything out of it. He was just thankful he came out of it, and he was doing okay after that race and everything. They checked him out, and he was doing okay. But, you know, still, all together, it shows that the Chevrolets are not performing well this year. They've not performed well in the variety of races that they have run. Toyota is still dominant in there, and Ford is also dominant, especially Stewart Haas Racing. They're dominant on the Ford end.
You mentioned the wreck William Byron. That was 15 laps ago. Took a number of cars out. A couple other dust-ups, too. Ryan Blaney and Kyle Larson. Larson ends up finishing fourth. And Blaney got knocked out and ends up finishing 37th as a result. But that helped set the tone. I guess it really allowed some guys to sort of restart, get some fresh tires maybe there in the last several laps. And also Ryan Blaney and Chase Elliott. Elliott ends up finishing 12th. But a couple of little incidents there. Take us through those.
Well, you know, getting back to the thing about Kyle Larson, I think probably the summation of everything that has gone wrong this season was summed up in the face of Chip Ganassi when Kyle Larson had that mishap there toward the end of the race. because they had been running really well too, and then everything has just fallen apart in the late stages for Kyle Larson. And Chip Ganassi, just the face he made and what he threw down at that point, that was one thing that set him up. That he was just, you know, it's like we can't win for losing. It seems like everything is going against us as we get ourselves primed to get in place to maybe come up with a win. We can't follow through on it. As for Ryan Blaney, I've got to talk about Ryan Blaney and Chase Elliott on this one. Really racing there hard to the end, and even raced even harder after the race, and even on the cool-down lap. Those guys were one of the things that I heard, and I don't know if you caught it, Larry McReynolds had said one of the comments on one of the shows, he said it was probably two of the most boneheaded people that he had ever seen in his life racing that hard and then using the complaint that he was racing me too hard. Well, that's what racing is all about. You're gonna race hard. You have to race hard, especially in the final 20 or 25 laps, even down to the final 10 laps. You're gonna race hard. You're not racing to, you know, finish a second or a third position. You're wanting that win. And for Ryan Blaney and Chase Elliott, they exchanged some paint, exchanged some damage on their cars, and then Chase Elliott went to the infield and talked to Ryan Blaney, had a couple of words to say to him, but I think everything got kind of smoothed out. But Larry McReynolds was point blank about it, and I even tweeted this. Maybe Larry McReynolds needs to be in consideration for running NASCAR because he lets these guys, or at least he wants these guys, to run the way that they should be running instead of running a finesse kind of, race of getting out there and then just not rubbing and getting out there and beating each other to death for the win, because that's what racing is all about.
Yeah. We're not driving to the ice cream stand here. We're trying to win a race. That's kind of the definition of what we're doing here. Also, let's stay with Kyle Larson for just a second. His car, give us the update. Was to go to NASCAR or R&D for a check. Any update on that and any resolution?
Well, as of right now, there's nothing, as of the time we're recording this, there's nothing that has come across from NASCAR about if there's going to be any kind of fines or anything involved. What we're talking about is the back window, the rear window, the back part of Larson's Camaro caved in. And when it caved in, they really don't have any kind of reasoning as to why it happened. They don't know why it happened. It just caved. And there's some people that said, well, it was like that to begin with. It was like that really as the race was going on, that nobody ever said anything about it. But I don't know. I don't know if it was if something structural, at least in the plexiglass, or at least in the material that they used, or the car itself. But R&D is going to be testing that. You know, I don't know. There's been a lot of questions this year about that Camaro, that ZL1 car, with some changes. Ford's going to be watching this. Ford's going to be watching this, and they're going to try to go and perfect a little bit more and have some things ready by the time the Mustang comes about in 2019. So Chevrolet, again, it's another one of those things of where the season's just not been going well. They're waiting up with bated breath to find out what's going to be the call on this, if anything's going to be said. They're hoping that it's not going to be against Larson, against Chip Ganassi's race team. But, these things happen. We don't know anything else about it. It's just that it caved in, or it kind of curved in, and no one can really say anything as to what caused it or why it happened.
So we talked the last couple weeks about Matt Kenseth. He's sharing a ride with Roush Fenway. He got knocked out in that William Byron wreck 15 laps to go. It seemed like he was having issues with the car throughout the race. Take us through Kenseth's ride.
Well, Kenseth, if people were really hoping for Kenseth to make a great run at this, it wasn't the greatest track in the world, especially Kansas. As Kenseth came into this one, and he finished almost dead last, close to the very end. But I think what you're finding out is you just can't go, or at least maybe from my point of view, I think with Jack Roush, you just can't go and plug somebody who is a better driver, say, in this case. And I'm not saying that Trevor Bayne is not a better driver or he's not that good of a driver. But you just can't take somebody and plug them into a car and maybe they've been out and away from it and they've not been maybe testing as long as what Bayne has been. But there's still something wrong there. There's something wrong in the cars, and there's something wrong at Ralph Fenway, especially on Trevor Bayne's car. Now, Ricky Stenhouse, on the other hand, Ricky Stenhouse has been running pretty good. He's been running really well here for the first third of the season so far. He's had his problems, too. But it's one of those things of what happens, I think, to a multi-car team. When you get two or more teams out there that's on the track, one gets a lot of technology, one gets a lot of the benefit out of it, and the others have to kind of scurry around. And then it's that competitiveness, even though they say that we're all in this together and we're all a part of the team and so forth, and we hear these things, I don't think you go and you tip your hand. I think it's almost like you're playing a big poker game. Is you've got your hand, you're not going to go and tip your hand to somebody else, and especially if it's somebody in your garage. You know, that may sound a little bit selfish, but in some ways, that's what it strikes me as. And I think that Trevor Bayne, he's a good driver. I just don't think he's had enough good material or good things underneath him here. And maybe they need to look at other things other than just Trevor Bayne and moving him out of there. Because, obviously, Matt Kenseth didn't solve the problem by setting into that car. But I know it's just one race. There's going to be several more races as the season goes on that Kenseth will be driving in. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. Kenseth may give them that shot in the arm that they need in order to get this team back on top. But, you know, the guy that I feel sorry for right now and I feel badly for is Trevor Bayne, because he's going to be the odd man left out. And if the season goes on and Kenseth retains that ride and holds on to that ride, Bayne's going bye-bye. And he's going to have to end up going to another team somewhere along the line. And we all know how that thing can go with teams. And then you've got the Young Bucks that's coming up out of the range. They're going to be hungry for some rides coming up in 2019. You've got Noah Gragson. He's over on the Truck Series. There will be people that will be looking at him. He's going to Xfinity. He's running a limited Xfinity this season. He could be looking to make the jump to go. And that's one of Kyle Busch's, prodigies right there, that he's wanting to get into that. He's wanting to get into a cup car before it's over with. So you've got a lot of young guns that's going to be out there. And then you've got Trevor Bayne, who's still young, but he's still going to be looking for a ride. And that's what's going to be the bad thing about it.
Yeah, it's tough. There's a lot of people out there and just a few rides to accommodate them. So now let's shift our attention. Next couple weekends, Charlotte is the focal point of NASCAR world. This Saturday night, the All-Star Race. Next weekend, the Coca-Cola 600. So let's start with the All-Star Race and the history of the All-Star Race. Let's get back into the background of that All-Star Race, Rod. Take us into that. And, of course, Saturday night's the big race, 8 p.m. start on FS1. So let's talk some All-Star Race here. Give us some of that background as to how we got here.
Well, the All-Star Race really started as a sit-down here, I'd say almost about 30 years ago with Darrell Waltrip, Dale Earnhardt Sr., and then also T. Wayne Robertson, who was the exec with Winston Cup and also with Winston and Motorsports at that time when Winston Cup was the big thing. And T. Wayne Robertson sat down and he had this idea of having an all-star race where there are almost to the point, no holds barred. You still have to abide by the rules and everything else as to how to get your car ready and how everything should be set. But you know what? For years there, it was a free-for-all. It was almost like a demolition derby. And for some of these drivers, it was a chance to get a car out there, either test it, see how it's going to do at Charlotte, or be able to use it at Charlotte. They ran a couple of races. I think they ran one race at Atlanta one year. But then most of the time here for the last 25 or 30 years, it has stayed in Charlotte. And that's where they've wanted it at. And for Charlotte, it's like the warm-up, sort of like the speed weeks, the warm-up that you have down at Daytona. But this is one of those of where there's a lot of beating and banging. You really don't know what you're going to expect. Your car can either be super fast, and you can drive away from everybody and hope to goodness that you're not in the melee and sort of be going on behind you from everybody else fighting for position. There's been the famous, there's been the one of where Davey Allison was shocked at somebody going past him, going underneath him. I think it was Kyle Petty at one time in one of those races. Bill Elliott, Dale Earnhardt, Darrell Waltrip. It's been one of those. It's just a great series and that great all-star race. It's been fun. Last couple of years, maybe not as fun as some of the years past, but who knows? No, it could be this time around. It could things get really strange under July to Charlotte, especially at the all-star race.
Yeah, and I know we'll talk more about this next week, but Coca-Cola 600 Memorial Day weekend, anytime it's a holiday weekend, you have NASCAR race, it's always a big racing weekend. Of course, the 600, it's Charlotte. It's a Sunday night race again. It's, I think it starts at 6 o'clock, but it'll be racing under the lights as the race finishes up. So, early look at that, like you said, this is sort of the All-Star week's a little bit different week, but then, all the teams get to gear up for the 600. Give us some maybe early thoughts on that race.
Well, for some of these drivers, the All-Star race, of course, like what we talked, it's a no-holds-barred sort of thing. But for the Coca-Cola 600, this is a chance to jumpstart your season again. I mean, you start out with Daytona. You start out Daytona going really well, and things really look good for you at Daytona. And then things either fall off or they continue to get better, as in the case of Kevin Harvick and Stewart Haas Racing. But there's a lot of teams that need a little bit of an extra boost right now, and that's those teams going into Charlotte for the Coca-Cola 600. One of those teams is probably Austin Dillon. Austin Dillon won the 600 last year, and he won the Daytona 500 this year, but he has not been performing well here as of late. He's been having a lot of trouble here and there, and I look for Austin Dillon to come no holds barred to try to go and try to defend his win from last year. Now, can that happen? This is 600 grueling miles. This is not just your 500-lap feature. This is 600 laps and 600 miles there on the mile-and-a-half Charlotte racetrack. So it's going to be a tough job for him to be able to accomplish. Kyle Busch is going to be looking to get back into some dominating. He's dominated some races so far, but he's had some bad luck in a couple of races, that broken drive shaft here a couple of weeks ago. He's looking for this one. This is that feature, like when Daytona is like the jewel of the crown when you go down there in Florida there at the first of the season. This is like the next crown jewel that you would have in the triple crown, so to speak, in this case, because you've got Daytona, then you've got Charlotte, and then people will come back and say the next crown jewel will be at Daytona when they have the firecracker race in July. And that's usually the way some of these drivers view it. It's a chance to kind of jumpstart their season. I'll tell you one driver that really needs a good performance this time around. He's drove well this season, but a win would be super big for him, would be Darrell Wallace Jr., Bubba Wallace. If they could pull something off and come up with a win at Charlotte, oh man, that would really make a lot of sponsors happy, and it put a big smile on the King's face once again, because that's a race that has been a long historic race for Petty Enterprises. I'm sure they want that race more than anything else, and so does Bubba Wallace.
We'll talk about one more thing that we'll have more time to talk about as we get closer to the date, but Bristol Dragway, June 15 to 17, the NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals. You'll be heading down there to cover for Augusta Free Press. And so early thoughts, this is something you've done in the past too. You've even gotten in a car, I think. So what can we expect? It's an early look, so we got a few weeks to get ready for this, but what can we expect from the NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals?
Well, if it's hot and if it's humid, we're going to see some slower speeds. I won't say that it's going to be super slow, as in less than 100 miles an hour, because that's not going to happen. But you'll see that the weather will play a factor in it. But if you have some good weather that weekend, you can see some records broken. especially you can see some teams that are really get back on their groove. Ron Capps is one of those favorites that will be coming into Bristol. Ron Capps drives the Napa Dodge is what he drives. So he'll be coming into that one. Then you've got Antron Brown. He'll be in one of the other categories. And you can't rule out the Forces either. John Force, of course, his daughters that they're racing also. You've got Courtney. They've been having some bad luck as of late. The Forces have been having some bad luck, and John Force especially. But Courtney came out, and she came out on top here a couple of weeks ago in one of the races and finished up. Won the race, won her Wally for this season, and she's probably looking for more of those and a chance to bring some more home, those trophies home. But you can't rule out people like Clay Milligan. He won last year down there. It was a tough weekend for him because it was the anniversary of the loss of his son, and he went in fine fashion and went out there and just blew the competition away and just did a tremendous job in his race. And then you really can't rule out a young man out of Christiansburg, Virginia, Matt Hagan. Matt Hagan drives one of these Mopar cars as well. He's been driving a Pencil Mopar / car here as of late, sponsorship wise. But when he's not there and he's not on the course, he's taking care of about a 600 head cattle farm there just outside of Christiansburg. And so he's looking at that. That's his home track, the same way that he looks at it. It's his home track. Got a lot of relatives that will be coming down from the Blacksburg Roanoke area, and they'll be coming down to see that race. So it could be a very interesting weekend with that. And also, let's not forget, too, coming up this weekend is the short track U.S. Nationals that's going on at Bristol Raceway there at the Bristol Motor Speedway. It'll be a lot of young, up-and-coming drivers, sort of like your Kyle Larson, your Chase Elliott, those that are looking for that big break. They'll be racing in six different categories, some open-wheel modified cars and also late model stocks. It'll be interesting to see this race this weekend, too, because it's going to be a full race weekend. It starts really with practice and a couple of, heat races, heat laps, that they'll be having lap features on Friday night, and then they'll have practice on Saturday, a full feature on Saturday night, and then on Sunday it'll be a 100-lap shootout starting at 2 o'clock at Bristol Motor Speedway. It's a chance to see some of those young guns. So it's going to be a full month of stuff. You got this month, then of course you got next month with the NHRA, and then we'll be right back in August by that time rolling around to the fall race at Bristol. So they're going to keep things busy there in Thunder Valley.
And keeping you busy as well. So I got to confess something for our listeners out there. I'm like, in my family, I'm the black sheep. I'm the one who doesn't either build race cars or actually race them. My father, God rest his soul, helped build race cars for a number of years. I had two uncles who drag raced, two first cousins who drag raced. And so, the power of the drag race. I've spent a lot of time, maybe too much time, in the pits and at racetracks up and down the, at least here in Virginia. So looking forward to your coverage of that coming up. And, of course, everything else you have to be forced to ride. Rod, we've gone through Kansas. We're getting people ready for Charlotte. All this Bristol stuff coming up. I want to thank you for your time today, Rod.
All right. Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks.